Good morning. It's good to be back. It's good to see that sunshine. We're into our third day, and perhaps we've hit the limit and things start just going out the pressure relief valve or something. We start shoving things off and out of our short-term memory because there's too much there. Can feel overwhelming after a bit. This morning I want to look at communication in the classroom itself. How are you communicating to your students in the classroom? So it's going to be focused on the dialogue between teacher and student. We'll look at general ideas first and then look at communicating expectations and communicating the lesson and teaching the lessons just a little bit as well. What you've probably noticed already, and you will continue to notice, is that there are some things I'm really sort of saying a couple of times over. I'm repeating myself in different ways. That's not really because I ran out of things to say. I'm quite certain that when we hear some of these things for the first time, it's okay to hear them a couple of times in a couple of different contexts. And I hope that that doesn't tire you. I'd like to read from Job 38, verse 2. Sorry, let's go with Proverbs. Proverbs 10, verse 19. In the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The tongue of the just is as choice silver. Maybe you ever feel, those of you taught already, how many of you ever feel at the end of the day that that was very much just a multitude of words? We talk all day. And I bring out this verse because we are, when we're teaching and we're talking all day, we aren't somehow exempt from this verse. We aren't somehow, well, we're teachers, so we can do the multitude of words and we don't have to worry about this. No, actually, teachers, we can do wrong with our mouth in that multitude of words pretty easily, and I think it's important we keep that in mind. Also, if we go to Matthew chapter 12, verse 35, a good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things, but I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by the words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. These are very serious verses, and for those of us who run our mouth for our living, it's a bit frightening. It's a bit frightening, but there we have it, and I think it's important, especially when we think about all the things we say in front of our class and to our students, it's important to keep those verses in mind. It helps us stay serious. Everything we looked at so far applies to what we do in the classroom relating to students. And so, like I said, you're going to hear some things commented about again. Every day, we are, in some ways, the center of attention. We didn't ask for it, but we are. And since we are, we need to go ahead and be that center of attention and ask for that attention, because you can't teach if the students aren't paying attention to you. But in the middle of that, remember that they are taking it all in, verbal and nonverbal, all of it. They're taking it all in all the time. And there are consequences for everything that we do and say and are. Also, I think it's important to keep in mind that every day, we read that verse from Matthew, our words come out of our heart, right? Every day we teach, not lessons, but we teach the students something about who we are, who we really are. And you're not going to teach 180 days and then do that for years and years and hide who you are. You won't hide it at all, because everything you do and say is a small revelation of who you are. And even in situations where students aren't sure they like school or like their teacher, it doesn't matter. They're still watching who you are, and you're having an effect on their concept of what a Christian, an adult, should be. And so we have a very, very serious position, and I don't say these things to up the anxiety. I say these things because we have to stay serious about what we're doing. We have to stay serious. With that said, I'm going to begin by saying that we have to watch our words. Watch your words. Watch your mouth. All the time. Some of us are quite free with our mouth. It isn't something we struggle to use. And some of us also have a very quirky sense of humor that can go a little bit beyond necessary in the classroom. Or we have a tendency to see the foibles and the silliness of the children sometimes, and it's sometimes funny to us, and we can't keep from commenting or saying some of us need to be reminded to watch our words a little bit more than others, perhaps. Watch words, because words have meaning, they have connotation, and they carry more information, a lot more information, than the definition of those words itself. We communicate much more as we're speaking than just what those words mean in a dictionary. Word choice. We know that choosing the right word at the right time is a beautiful thing. Choosing the wrong word, the right word at the wrong time, if there is such a thing, or the wrong word at the right time, taking words and using them at the wrong place and in the wrong way can communicate something very negative to a student. So we have to be careful. Pay attention to words. I think it's good, as teachers, it's good to work on our vocabulary. It's good to expand it. It's good to pay close attention to what words actually mean. Now, my favorite subject is English literature, and so, of course, I really think words are something. But even if that's not your favorite subject, pay attention to words. Pay attention to the meaning of words. Pay attention to the words you're choosing and the words you're putting together. In our speech, it's important to be positive. We can, depending on our personality, frame things negatively. We can speak about historical events, current events, things going on around us, and we can speak about them in a very negative way, or we can speak about them in a more positive way. We get to spin things all the time, and I think it's worth reminding ourselves or listening to ourselves to see, are we spinning things negatively? Can we really speak negatively about something? Not about a student, but about something else. When we are very negative and critical about things outside of the classroom, it's not aimed at the classroom or at the school or at parents or anything like that. It's something else. But even that communicates our willingness to really be down on something and really be negative and judgmental. And so we communicate something in that way as well. Also, are we complainers in front of our students? I hope not. That's too bad. Or can we actually put a more positive spin on the fact that the weather is oppressive today? Where I teach, we don't have air conditioning in our school, and it's, you know, most of the year that's perfectly fine. But spring and fall, we can have some days and some weeks where it's a bit of an endurance test. And I've never found it useful to engage with the students and go on about how miserable this is. It doesn't help. It's not positive, and it does not change the weather very much. And there are other things, too. We can complain about our facility if it's not very, very nice. Maybe there's some things in some of our schools that could use some updating or some improvement. And Students hear us whining and complaining about that right in front of them. What are we communicating? It's not very positive. We're telling them that when things aren't quite to our liking, you can complain about that. That's what we're telling them. So keep it positive. When things are not perfect, don't spend time being negative about that or complaining about that. It's not useful at all, and you are telling your students that it's okay to whine and complain about things you don't like. In everything that we do, listen to yourself. What are you saying and how are you saying it? And we, in a given day, have so much work on our hands to just choose words and get the class taught. Right? To just keep our mind together enough to teach a class. We can easily teach a whole class and never have given a single thought to the way we were speaking and the words we were choosing because we're busy. We're completely engaged just doing this. But as you can, and as you remember, it's worth just listening to yourself. And I've heard of teachers recording themselves and listening to that after school. I never had the nerve to do that. But if you really want to pay attention to the way you are speaking and the words you are choosing, that's a good way to do it. I've even heard of people getting somebody to video a class. Then you can even see all the nonverbal things, and you can see what you're doing with your hands, and you had no idea you were doing while you were teaching, or whatever. But I would say at least if you have the nerve for this, take a little, use your phone or a little voice recorder or something, and record a class and listen to it sometime when you're in a good mood. sometime when you're not feeling too negative about your work, because I have listened to myself in recordings in occasions like this a little bit, not much, and you will hear things that you didn't think about before. I think it is worth, however you want to do it, listen to yourself or find somebody that is willing to give you feedback, even if it's feedback that is a little corrective or that would indicate that you should change something. I've received that already, and I've always valued it. It's you need a bit of a thick skin sometimes to take it, but feedback that comes to us that has anything to do with improving the way we are communicating to our students and the way we are acting or behaving up front is almost always valuable feedback, even if it sometimes doesn't feel fair at first. There's something there that is fair, maybe not completely fair. There's something there that is fair. That's worth paying attention to. Whatever you were doing stood out to that person as being something that could be improved on, so they said something. Well, good for them, because a lot of people don't have the nerve to say something when they think of something that they perceive as being worthy some improvement. I already mentioned that watching our nonverbal communication is also important. I had to learn, I think this is because somebody said something to me, but I had a big stand like this for years and it was solid, and I really would find myself teaching like this. What do you think? Is that good? You all sat with that up front all day? You're checking, it's a little tedious. I find, or I'm quite convinced, that a teacher who teaches like this, what are they communicating? They apparently haven't thought about the fact that what they're doing up front is worth being like this. And the difference, of course, is subconscious. I think it's significant. Keep it straight and keep it open. And I think it's pretty important. It's all part of the nonverbal things you're communicating while you're teaching the class. Do you think you're doing something important enough that you could stand up for it? Now, the last number of years I taught from a chair. That has its own challenges. How do you sit in a chair? That would be equivalent to this. So, but keep that in mind. Consider your teacher persona or your act, if you want to call it that, And I know I just got done saying you can't act, you can't hide anything, and you can't. But at the same time, when you are in the classroom, you are thinking of yourself as something while you are there. What is it? Are you thinking of yourself as being a warm, fuzzy friend to the students only? Are you thinking of yourself as being, and I know this is a real challenge if you're 19, 18, 19, 20 and you're going to the classroom for the first time. I've encouraged beginning teachers to think of themselves as being 25, if that's useful. Because even if you're 19 or 18 and you're in front of the classroom, you should be thinking about how much of an adult you are or how much of an adult you are trying to be in front of those students. Because I think it's pretty important that you attempt to be an adult or you practice it or you think of yourself as being an adult. And I'm not suggesting by any means that a 19-year-old is not an adult. But I am pretty sure that a 19-year-old has a slightly different self-concept than a 30-year-old. And that shows up in the classroom often, in many subconscious ways, but it does show up in the classroom. So what are you? How are you presenting yourself? That's what I think of when I think about teacher persona. This is tricky because you can put on an act that is, in a sense, fraudulent. It's false. And if you are putting an act on that is obviously an act and is not who you are, I can tell you that the adolescents will pick up on it before they enter the classroom, probably. And soon after they enter, they will have sniffed that one out and they will do something about that, usually pretty quickly. And yet, when I think about teacher persona, I am saying, how do you think of yourself when you're in the classroom? I like to think that as best as we can, we put together a certain confidence, but also a caring. I'm confident, but I'm not aloof, right? So a certain confidence, but I also see and I care about what's going on. Energetic, but also sort of energetic in handcuffs. There has to be a limiting factor of some kind. When in my earlier years, I was so energetic, it was probably ridiculous. I don't know what it looked like. I never asked anybody to video it. And there is a limit. You can go into the classroom and be so energetic that they take that energy and send it back at you, and then you're not sure if you quite are okay with that much energy in the classroom. But if you are highly energetic in the classroom, just know that they will be too, and you need to know what you're going to do with that. If you're highly energetic and you're going and you're cracking jokes and you're carrying on and then they get going and then you reprimand them for being out of order, they're not going to be too proud of you, probably. But energetic and yet a certain calmness and a stability. You're not just bouncing off the walls. Demanding but kind. You ask for it, you expect it, but you are kind about it. In all of this, it is very important that we practice paying attention to the students and being alert to the effect of our words and our actions in real time. You say something that may have been a little bit, could have been taken the wrong way. Maybe it's a bit of a reprimand or something like that, and you intended it for that student, but this student over here obviously took the hit. It wasn't your intention, maybe. It's something you should notice. You should notice how your words are landing. And this takes practice because, like I said, for a long time, we're just trying to keep our wits together and teach this class. You layer a whole thing of assessing how everything's going with the students at the same time, and we're on to a lot more work and being aware of a lot more things at the same time. But I think practicing that as much as we can is valuable. Be alert to your students in real time. Watch how your words are landing. Communicating our expectations in the classroom, I'm fairly convinced that if we are clear about what we want and we have a good way of making that clear, you're well on your way of getting what you want in your classroom. It's only part of it, but you're well on your way. We can be unclear about what we want, and it sets up a confusion. And if you're working with older students, they have this sense of justice that flares up. We thought you meant, we were pretty sure you meant, and now you seem to be somewhere else with that, and oh, this is, you're just being awful. You're being unjust. You're being unfair. You're switching around on us. I've only ever taught adolescents and teens, and they want things black and white and straight and clear every single time. They want a perfect world. They expect that out of the adults around them. It's unfair. It's ridiculous, maybe, but that's what they want. And if they see something that isn't lining up quite right, they'll, at least in their minds, they'll judge that harshly. Never mind, it's a unique stage of life they go through. Never mind that they have very high expectations, and they hold adults to a line. They want them to be perfect. And it seems like they have a very difficult time looking at themselves and understanding how many ways they are falling apart. And yet, they want the adults in their world to be fair and to be just so-so. Now, if they catch on that adults are being inconsistent in some way or the other, and those adults are behaving in ways that would suggest that they don't think they are being inconsistent at all, there you have something that young people will have a big problem. They'll have a big problem with that. If they understand that the adult that is in front of them in the classroom isn't perfect, and that adult also makes it very clear that they understand they're not perfect, then we can go with that. Then they're fine. But I think it's very important that we have a way to communicate our expectations quite clearly. Those expectations have to be realistic. I'm not really going to talk about that. But communicate them clearly. If we say that we want something done a certain way, maybe lessons done a certain way, or we want a certain level of neatness or performance, and we turn around and we fail at that same requirement resoundingly ourselves, that's a confusion of expectations. So when we communicate our expectations, we're not only talking about words, we're not only making a list of policy or guidelines for the classroom, we're also sticking to them ourselves very carefully, because our expectations are communicated both by words and by our own actions. If we want neat work and we want them to care about their lessons and be involved and be very careful students, and we tell them that going like this, then we have a bit of a confusion going on there. Make it clear to your students, though, that success in school is much more than getting a good grade tomorrow when we check this lesson. When we talk about expectations and high expectations and wanting students to be successful and all of that, and everybody can win, right? I'm pretty sensitive to that because I have worked with a lot of students. Well, I worked with this student, first of all. I was not that top student in school at all. I think my students, never told my students very often what I was like in school, and thankfully I was teaching in a different community from the one which I grew up in. But I have no doubt that they would have been shocked over and over again to have heard what I was like in school. Just couldn't believe it, right? I didn't have top grades. I'm not sure if I want to tell you now. But I'm sensitive to the students who struggle to learn and to learn things the way we teach things in our classroom. Because not all students do well with that fast-paced, rote learning, lots of drill, lots of tedious work. Not all students do well with that at all. Some have challenges with reading, challenges with doing math. Many have challenges with paying attention or finding it easy to do tedious things on their papers, because everything in the classroom is much, much more interesting and demands their attention much more than that, like I suggested earlier, that math form, that drill work. So, in situations where you have students with a varying range of abilities and some struggle to get their work done or struggle to pass their grade levels or their grades are barely passing, in a setting where you have students like that, and by the way, that's the most common setting. It's rare you don't have a couple students like that. We need to be careful what we're saying about being successful and winning and setting up all kinds of incentives where everybody can get XYZ things and make long chains and whatever all else. Very, very careful. We sometimes think that just speaking about success and winning and high expectations and let's all see if we can get 100%. When you say that and you know full well there's two students that haven't gotten 100% this year, what is your expectation and what does that sound like to those students? There are students that are there, yes, I can do this, I'm going to get 100%. And there are students there that probably just look blank. So in the classroom, when we are communicating expectations for performance, especially lesson performance or academic performance, be very alert and be mindful of how your language and your expectations and your pushing and all of that. For a student that struggles to get even a decent grade, posters that we can buy and put on the wall can be a bit of a problem, right? I don't give grades. You earn them. It's a poster that's wonderful for the student that's somewhere between the B and A plus grade level. For the rest of the students, they don't even know what that means. or they don't understand. They don't connect to that at all. Everybody can get 100%. You might say that because you want to encourage them to try, but be careful because that can sound very different to some students. Have an attitude that all students can learn, for sure, and that some can excel, and be careful how much of a fuss you make over the students that got 100% three times in a row. I say that probably as much as anything because that was not my experience in school. If I had been that A-plus student that just whizzed through school and got those top grades, I'm not sure if I'd be saying this. But for a teacher that's always just making a big deal over the student that did really well, that might be one way to encourage the student that needs a little motivation, but it sure is a great way to say something without saying something to the student that does not get 100%. I'm just suggesting we should be careful about this. I'm not saying that we should somehow try to avoid ever rewarding good performance because it might hurt somebody in the classroom because we rewarded good performance. This can be taken too far, but I think we need to pay attention to it even so. Be clear in communicating what you want your students to do in the classroom. If you have procedures you want everybody to follow so that you have an orderly classroom, spell that out. Perhaps when they're older, write it out for them. Not a 20-page handbook for the classroom. That's too much. I always forced myself to keep my set of procedures and guidelines for how we do things in my classroom on one side of an 8.5x11 sheet. Here's what we expect in this classroom. I never bumped onto another page. And I always handed out a ring binder with the clear view pockets on the outside. And on one side of the ring binder was our class schedules, and the other side was the set of guidelines. So at any time, this was very, very available. It was on the outside of their binder. And you'd be surprised how much you can get on an 8.5x11 sheet if you go with small font. But I kept it on one paper, and I tried to spell it out as clearly and concisely as possible. If you spell your expectations and your procedures and your guidelines out clearly, then make sure you're also following up and asking them to follow that, to stick with that, and ask them to correct their behavior if it's not lining up. In the classroom itself, as you are doing class, I think it's important to make sure the students are engaged. No student should be allowed to just sit through the classes because they're shy, although you're going to be careful how you call on them. You're going to be careful how you frame the question, because for some students it really is painful to speak up in front of their peers. It's hard. It's they do not like it. If you have a student that struggles with reading, don't make them read a lot of things in front of their peers. If you have a student that has dyslexia in some way or the other, making them read more in front of the others probably isn't going to improve their reading much. And for students who have struggle reading, if they catch on they're going to have to read something, their heart rate goes poof. They're terrified, because they are really afraid of reading in front of other people because they struggle with that. And so, again, this is paying attention to individual students. But they should be given opportunity to engage in the class. If you have a student that you know struggles with reading, they're probably not the student you're going to call on to read two or three paragraphs or to read an excerpt from something. But they could be the student you could call on for some comment on what was read. They can be involved. Nobody should be uninvolved completely. I try hard to read in real time how my picking on them is working in the classroom, how it's working or not working. But I do ask them to get involved, always. I think when students discover that it's safe, you're not going to make some funny comment about what they said. Adolescents love when a teacher takes what they... Adolescents don't love when a teacher asks them to respond, and they do, and then the teacher has something a little funny to say about what they said. That's mean. I think that's what that is. You ask them, you kind of force them to talk, and then you acted like what they said was kind of ridiculous or something. So when you are asking them to... You want them to talk and engage, then be very careful what you say as a follow-up, because you want them to become comfortable with sharing what they have to say, especially when you ask them to do so. I think it's also important when we're teaching to have an expectation that they learn how to say things properly, that they learn proper grammar. If they speak or they answer in class and it's kind of poor on the grammar end of things, kindly find a way to ask them if, you know, could you try that again? Remember English class yesterday? You give that another try. Be kind about it, but actually ask them to do it. I'm not talking about being so careful and sensitive, but you don't ask them to learn how to speak and learn how to give complete answers. And if there is an obvious, you're in review, you're doing some fast review between, there's an obvious complete answer and they want to stop a third of the way through, hoping that was enough, it shouldn't be enough. You should kindly ask them to, is that it? Any more? Care to share some more? Is that the whole thing? Go expect them to respond to you in completeness, in proper form. In math class, if you asked for something and they want to just give you the quantity, they want to say 5, and it should be 5 centimeters, are you going to be okay with 5? What's the distance between these 2 points? 5. 5 what? Miles, right? No. 5 what? Ask them for the complete... They should learn that you are as complete and as clear as possible all the time, and you also expect them to start practicing that on the way back. Should be complete. I know it could seem tedious at times, but I don't think it is. We are there to teach them how to communicate while we are communicating. We're there to teach them how to figure out what they learned, arrange it into words, and give it back to you. And when we are doing that kind of back and forth. I think it's pretty important that we help them learn how to communicate in complete sentences and using correct units in math and science. Here's one that I was helped with after teaching quite a few years, and I admit I was a bit embarrassed that somebody had to tell me this. I think in an effort to empathize with the difficulty of the materials, maybe biology, maybe algebra or something like that, I would sometimes say that, this gets a little bit difficult. This is hard, but, now we're on to the tough stuff. And another teacher pointed out to me and said, why are you telling them this is hard before you even started? And I didn't even think about it that I was, but I was. I was indicating to them that what we're about to look at is hard. And this other teacher said, it's a lot better just to go for it, teach it as clearly as you can, and they might discover it's hard, but you didn't pre-program them to believe that it was. And that was a good correction or a good tip. When you are teaching things, and you know from experience that this creates difficulty for students, maybe you can ask them to listen carefully or watch closely. Maybe you could tell them, watch closely because it's easy to miss something here or something like that, but probably not go into it getting them ready to expect that this is really hard. Just leave it out. Don't tell them that. They might find it. I'm pretty sure that some students didn't find it to be hard, but if I told them that it was before we got going, they would have thought it was hard, perhaps. So don't apologize for the material that you're teaching, or try to apologize that this is difficult. Teach it as well as you can and then support them in that learning and help them learn it, whatever it takes. And of course, while you're in class, insist that your students are paying attention. Some of us perhaps are a little bit OCD about this. I probably was. But I could not bear seeing a student work on something while I was in class, while we were in class. You always have these students that are very motivated and they just want to check off the list of assignments. It seems to be their reason for existing. Get those assignments finished. I don't mind that. It's great when you have a student that's motivated to complete assignments. But some students were so motivated that they basically, in class, were telling me without telling me that you're boring, I'd like to get my work done. And they would be working or trying to work, or they're looking at me and well, they never got away with it because I don't miss much, which can be a problem because it's hard for me to focus then too. And so I never could bear it when they were trying to do work while we were in class. And one way you can keep that from happening, of course, is not to reprimand them, just make sure they're the next person that needs to reply to something. Ask them. Especially try to look for a situation where you detect they may not have been following too closely. And then ask them to repeat back what you just said. All right, time for review. So what did I just say? I think it's very important that they soon learn that you expect them to be engaged as much as you are. Now, if you are truly boring up front, then probably you should do something about that at the same time. In all of this, when you have high expectations for paying attention in class, for behavior, for being respectable, be ready to give positive feedback and affirmation when they are doing what you want them to do, because that's powerful. It always has been, it always will be. Students should hear from you when it's going well, as much as hear from you when it's not going well. I always found it was easy to assume that when students are doing what you want them to do and you're happy with that and everybody's happy, you wouldn't have to say anything about that. I'm not sure about that. I think you do need to actually say and give positive affirmation that you really appreciated or you really liked the way they helped with the class Or maybe your students help with the janitorial work in the schoolroom. At the end of the day, they need to clean things up in the classroom, and you see a student that actually did something. They picked something up that they weren't commanded to pick up, which is unusual with teenagers. They will walk over trash, right? But you see a student that actually picked it up and put it in the trash can. I wouldn't want to miss the opportunity to say, "There you go. You're my man." Right? Especially if it was a boy that did it. That's great. That's wonderful. You picked that up. And sometimes I was negative about this as well. I would come into the restroom, recess cycle time, maybe before lunch, use restrooms, wash up and things, and I'd come in there after this whole 12 or 14 or 15, 14, 15-year-old boys were through there, and there's paper towels on the floor. And I wouldn't usually say who threw the paper towel on the floor. That was beside the point. I was like, how many of you walked over paper towels on the floor? 12 of you. And not a single one of you thought of bending over for a half a second and putting it in the trash can. Well, well, well. Just a few tips on communicating in the class itself. And again, these are practical. Many of them I learned from other sources, but they can give us a framework. Sometimes new teachers going into teaching simply have the question, well, what do I do in class? How do I teach a lesson? And that's a good question. You're a teacher. You might want to figure out how to do that. How do I teach a lesson? I have to teach a grammar lesson. I have to teach a science lesson. How do I do it? What do I do? One way to do it is to call the class to order and tell them to see if they can find their papers somewhere in their desk and exchange them and check yesterday's lesson from top to bottom. And then take grades maybe and answer pesky questions about whether this is a right answer or a wrong answer. And then when everybody's clear and you have all their grades, you could tell them to turn to the new lesson and talk about it a little bit, or maybe read your script from the teacher's guide, and anybody have questions? And then the class is over, and they work at it. And maybe that would work. I think it works because students teach themselves quite well. But imagine what could happen if you went a little bit further than that and did a little bit more than that in a class, especially if you're teaching grammar to eighth graders. I love it. It was always a challenge. I've had a lot of eighth graders. I could tell on their face. They thought this man now is he is bona fide crazy. How could anybody be that excited about indirect objects or about retained objects and about passive voice? How could this possibly be? Is he actually real? Now, I did put on an act for eighth graders because I wanted them to cut loose from their idea that grammar is an impossible mess and that is no fun. It's not true. I believed it wasn't true. I still believe it's not true, and I had to shock them out of that. And so maybe I was a little extreme in teaching grammar. But still, if you teach grammar checking yesterday's lesson and reading the text out of their textbook and saying, do you have any questions, they probably will hate grammar. I expect they will. So what might we do? How might we be more intentional in our class? I think it's worth being clear about what it is you're going to learn in this class. Objectives for the lesson, for the class, I think are very important. Especially when you get into the upper grades where you're having a science class and it's only an hour or an hour and a half long, and you might think there were a lot of things you're going to talk about, but did you talk about that whole subject? Or did you choose a couple of things you wanted to learn here and let a million other things unsaid and unlearned for later? If you're teaching biology to 10th graders, how much biology do they get in a year of the entire subject? I don't know, what do you think? 1%? 2%? What did they get in 10th grade biology? They got an introduction. And so in that introduction, you should be communicating very clearly to them what it is we're going to focus on learning here. What are our objectives here for this class? We're not trying to learn everything we could learn about this subject. Or in history, how much time are you going to spend on the Civil War? How many things are you not going to talk about and you're not going to ask them to recall or you're not going to test them on? There's enough to deal with the things that you do intend for them to remember and you do intend to test their knowledge on later. And I think it's pretty important that you make it clear to them what it is that we are for sure going to try to remember from this class. These are our objectives. Be upfront with that. This is more important with older students, perhaps, but still quite important. And then, with as much as we can, scribble out a basic lesson plan for the class. Especially if in the first number of years, I'll admit, I was not writing lesson plans for math classes and for grammar classes for years already. I had the lessons perhaps memorized, I don't know, and I had a way of teaching these things and I had a way of doing classes. I was not putting out a whole bullet by bullet lesson plan, say this, then do this, then do this. But in the beginning, that's a good thing to have in place. I know if you're teaching four grades and 8 subjects, you can't write out that 8.5 by 11 sheet of spelled out lesson plan for every class. You won't sleep. But as much as you can, and if it's a class where you struggle with the class, struggle teaching it, then that's probably the one you especially have to spell out. This is how I plan to go through this class, and I write it down so that I actually do go through that class that way. So lesson plans are important. I hesitate to really stress them because we have a lot of teachers that would be writing a lot of lesson plans if they wrote out a detailed lesson plan for every class they taught. So do the best you can. I don't want to make you feel like you're a bad teacher or guilty because you didn't have this thoroughly printed out lesson plan for every class you went to. But as much as you can, and especially for those classes that you find a little harder to teach. The class itself, there's not one single way to go through a class to do the review of what they've done yesterday or before, to teach the new stuff, and to assess whether they're learning the new stuff. But I find a really basic structure that follows review at the beginning to bring them back into the class. Where are we on this subject? What have we done? A quick review, and that's a back and forth, just a dialogue, ask questions, see who remembers what. A quick review followed by an actual assessment of what they did yesterday, which would be checking and grading maybe if you have time for that. Don't get too overburdened with that checking and grading. In the upper grades, there is a lot of material that they do, or I hope so. If they're in 10th grade, they should be doing a lot of work. This is a stack of papers. And if you spend time going through every inch of that, checking everybody's homework from top to bottom, when are you going to teach? I don't think that's valuable. You check enough so that you can assess what they've done and where they are with that, and then move on. And if you, I frequently would just say, okay, everybody's work in, I'll look at this some more after class. And I do. I check it a little more thoroughly after class. But in order to not chew up all of my class time checking, I would check enough that I was comfortable, that I knew where things were. And if I knew that I was going to be tight for checking, I would look over their work ahead of time and not check in class at all, but rather make comments on the things that I found when I went over their papers ahead of class and talk about them a little bit and then move on. So there's review slash assessment or checking of what they did before. And then I would go into my part of the teaching. And that is to take the new concept and lay it out using the whiteboard, using the materials, and go through the new material carefully and clearly and concisely. In doing that part of it, in my part of it, I would often look for ways to get them involved. if you're in the middle of subjective complements in grammar, or you're in the middle of writing and you're looking at sentence structure, you can be teaching your new concept and asking them for what we had already at the same time, just to keep them involved so that you're not the only one talking for a long time. You can start into the new material and then say, look, we already did something like this, right? What was it? And keep them with you there, but you're doing most of the talking. And then, especially if it's something in math or grammar where they need to start working with this material, then you put some things on the whiteboard and you have them help you do it. They start telling you how to do it. What's the next step? And you do a number of them where they are telling you how to do it. And often you have to correct or guide or give clues because they don't quite remember, but you're doing it together. And you do a number of these exercises together, whether they be working with sentence structure or doing math problems of some kind. You do it together. You're helping them, they're helping you, and you do a good bit of this. But toward the end of class, you need to be doing some where they are doing it pretty much entirely. Maybe they go ahead and do the first two problems in the new assignment. Right there, right now, while you're still with them. I always like to have my students, especially math students, I wanted them to do the first couple problems, especially the problems that were new concepts for today, and I would make the circuit and see how they're making out with those. But they were doing them entirely, and I would essentially tell them whether they were right or wrong. And we'd just work with those new problems until everybody was getting it right. At the very end of it, it's fine to quickly run over the main points again, just to review quickly and wrap it up. Review to check for understanding. And if you find a student isn't quite sure and the others are fine, then let the others go and help that student out. Some teachers are very concerned about helping their students too much with their homework. And there is such a thing. But I was never so much concerned about that when it came to helping them with the new concept. It was fine. Help them do the new stuff. Most of our curriculum is set up in such a way that they're going to be around to that stuff quite a few more times yet. And as we are reviewing and coming across things multiple times, then I expect them to do a lot more of it themselves. But don't be afraid to help them with the new material. And if there's only one student that's struggling, end the class and go help that student. Let the others go ahead if they're ready to go. I like to always keep my classes a dialogue. The class that I found the most difficult to do this with was history class, because that's one where it's easy to lecture, the easiest to lecture. But I would try to keep them engaged with the occasional question and see if they can connect something we talked about before to what we're talking about now. I think it's very important, especially with upper grade or teachers of older students, that there is a constant dialogue. How else are you going to know how they're making out? How else are you going to know what they've understood if you're not asking them to give back to you as you go along? So teach with dialogue. Ask them to be involved. Again, in all of this, remember to pay attention to what you're saying and how you're saying it. And as much as you can, watch your students to see how the words are landing. Thank you.